Hello, if you've just joined us, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan, and we're continuing our look at the underlying reasons why Malaysia has been found to have an embarrassingly high number of scholarly publications in what they call predatory journals. Joining us on the line now, we have Dr. Islan Zakaria. She's a senior lecturer with Birmingham University. Birmingham Business School at University of Birmingham in the UK, formerly the CEO of the Malaysian think tank, The Centre. Idlan, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Now, I want to get your initial reactions. What did you make of that report that Malaysia had has the fifth highest number of academic publications in predatory journals?
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Sharad. Thank you for having me. My initial reaction was I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised because the existence of predatory journals is really kind of not been a secret in academia. But I was a bit disappointed to see Malaysia quite high up on that list. But to put that into context as well, predatory journals are quite hard to spot because if you look in the paper, the Czech paper that was being quoted this year, they went into great deliberation in trying to find what these predatory journals and predatory papers look like. So I suppose my bigger question here would be, is there any kind of support for academic staff in identifying these predatory journals? Because we use systems like Scopus, etc., but clearly it's not the arbiter that it's meant to be because it's gone through this whole system as well. And I guess for me, the way that I think about this is that we are here now, right? We're stuck here. We are in this situation. What do we do? And this is a question not just for Malaysian academics, but for the global academic community as well. Where do we move from here to kind of stem this predatory journal problem?
Idlan, do you think part of the problem is that, one is the massification of higher education, just the sheer number of universities now around the globe offering PhD programs, but all kind of funneled now through still maybe a much smaller list of platforms in which they could publish and be recognized for that work. I mean, is that part of the problem, just the scale of university education globally and the number of PhDs being produced?
I think the number of PhDs being produced is that much of an issue as much as the quality of the PhDs being produced, right? I'm all for having as many universities out there producing as many PhDs if it means that there is an advancement of knowledge. But if this creates shortcuts in the way that they are doing things, then that is obviously quite problematic. But there is something that is probably not quite addressed as much is the Western hegemony on good journals, right? This idea that getting into a Western journal is better, English-speaking journal. There are a number of kind of native language journals in Japanese and Korean and Chinese, for example, or in Arabic, which are also of good quality, but they don't get as much coverage. So we kind of aspire to get into the good top English journals, and that is hard because getting into the good journals is not easy, and it's not as apolitical or as objective as you think. There is a little game that is being played, and I think it is this game that is being exploited by predatory journals, and then this is kind of appended, I guess, to a certain extent by unrealistic targets being set for some academic
right.
to publish.
I like that you brought that up, Idlan, about predatory journals are just exploiting a gap in the market. They see an opportunity and they've seized it. But I like what you brought up about the pressures on academics, perhaps here in Malaysia particularly, to publish. And that's often tied into promotions and, academic, the way that the promotion structure is, the promotion system is structured. There is so much pressure on academics to publish. And we spoke to Zarum a little bit earlier, who said that, it's publish or perish. How do we dismantle that systemic problem?
I think one of the first things we need to kind of acknowledge is the fact that publishing is one of the many pillars that are taken into consideration with when it comes to promotion. So I mean, in Malaysian universities and even in universities that I've been affiliated with in the UK and in the work for, it's not the only thing that they look at. But it is one of the major things that people are quite obsessed with, because it is something that is probably a little bit more within their control. Because if you are waiting for, let's say, one of the criteria for promotion is like an appointment or validation from an external body, right? You don't really kind of easily get validated. You can't get the ministry to come and call you up to basically become, you know, a panel member. But you could definitely control the number of articles that you produce or how you teach, for example. But then this kind of leads on with this point about KPIs that are within this promotion culture that I find a little bit disturbing. When I was in Malaysia last year and a little bit before that, I kind of compared notes with some of my colleagues, because my kind of KPI is to basically have approximately 3 or 4 papers within a year, right? Sorry, within 5 years, my apologies, right? And then I compare it with them, and I'll give you an example of one of my colleagues at an IPTA in Malaysia. It's required to publish 7 papers a year, plus get some grant funding to the tune of maybe 100,000 ringgit, plus make sure that at least 2 master's students or 1 PhD student graduates, plus prepare some teaching innovation stuff things, right? And you have all these things coming into that. And I'm only going to speak like to my subject area. I'm not quite sure what it works like in other subject areas, but in my subject area, to get a paper in a good journal, the turnaround period is about between 18 months to 3 years. So if you have there a market for a wow. journal that says that I can get you this within a year, right?
Idlan, is it possible that what the problems that we're having is that these KPIs are being set by people who are not academics, who actually have no understanding of the world of academia and how these processes might be, partly because of the demand of universities to corporatize and to mimic, you know, corporate-style KPI systems? Could that be one of the problems?
I think it's not completely unlinked, because some of the VCs or the management of the top universities were academics themselves. But I think what is a more important nuance here is that every subject area is different. And that doesn't really translate particularly well. So if you were, for example, working for a paper in the sciences, having 20 names on a paper is probably very much acceptable because you are working in the lab. But some of the Nobel Prize winning papers have got 50 authors on the paper. And yet, for a social science area, if you have more than 3 names on a paper, people start asking you, what is the incremental contribution of the additional author, for example?
Right.
So every subject area needs these kind of nuances, blanket KPIs that don't reflect the reality of subject-level nuances. There are some subjects, for example, that value more book chapters, right? So they value book chapters, but they don't value journals as much. But that's not visible. So that, I think, needs to change.
Can I come back to that example, Idlan, that you gave a little bit earlier about the need to publish 7 papers and find grant funding and get PhD students to graduate? That seems like an enormous burden on academic staff here in Malaysia. Is there a reason is it a lack of resources, human resources, that they've got to do so much compared to, say, peers overseas?
I think this is a theory, okay, and I can't substantiate this as an academic. I'm going to cast that caveat right out, right? part of it is also driven by metrics that are put into university rankings, right? So 32.5% of university ranking scores are driven by citations, okay? So again, you know, so that there's that kind of drive, right? And if you think about it from universities overseas are so much more well-established. The culture, the academic culture has been around for maybe, you know, at least 100, 150 years, some even older. And they've created, cultivated this culture of research that has been, you know, more supportive of this kind of activity over time. We can't just manufacture this within, you know, a number of years by just providing KPIs. to this extent. What I was telling you was these were the what my colleagues shared were the counted KPIs. There's also the other kind of stuff, the administrative stuff that they have to do, but there isn't equal support for them to do this. You want me to write 7 papers, brilliant, but don't give me a ton of teaching to do as well, right?
Right. So I can just sort of ask you about, you know, where the whole question of universities in Malaysia and this, you know, this master plan by successive governments to turn into a business. Basically, we want to get into the global business of providing tertiary level education. And we, you know, I think the number of foreign students was pegged at 170,000 or 220,000, something around that order of attracting these people to spend money and education in institutions in Malaysia. Is that skewing the question of academic culture and put, you know, slowly building the kind of value system that you say undergird other universities in different parts of the world?
I think that making universities as a business, I think, is problematic anyway from my own kind of philosophical point of view. But if you are going to be a business, you have to decide what kind of business you're going to be. Right? We're not going to become the next Harvard in 10 years. We're not going to be able to attract the caliber of Harvard students in 10 years. But then we need to ask ourselves, is the caliber of students that we are attracting now the caliber of students we want? Because the action that we are taking seems to be resulting in these, right? This master plan, this kind of corporatization of a public good, essentially, which is what education is. So that kind of, you know, we can't just jump on the bandwagon and copy what other people are doing because it worked for them. They took a long time. These things took a long time to percolate for these institutions, for other people overseas. You can't compare Malaysian universities or emerging economy universities with universities that have been established and also are actually kind of key players in the hegemony of the education, the world education system in itself.
Right. Well, Idlan, thank you so much for joining us on the show and helping us think through this really complex issue. What seemed to be, you know, I think we've kind of gone beyond the headlines of just Malaysia's ranking when it comes to predatory journals and discussed the wider, the underlying causes. And I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing those insights. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
And don't forget to get all the latest news and information on COVID-19 vaccines at the Astro Awani website, astroawani.com, or the Astro Awani app.